So today I'd like to introduce to you Dr. Tonya Bergson from Butler University. And students, you're going to read Tonya's paper after watching this video, which is a really important paper in this module. And the paper's called Mother's Speech to Hearing Impaired Infants with Cochlear Implants. Now, we've been using this paper for a number of years now, and I think it's a really key read, and it gives us a really crucial understanding of what needs to be in place for language to develop in deaf children, which is what this module is all about. So, Tonya, welcome. And really exciting to have you here talking with me today and talking to our students at the University of Manchester. So could you explain some background to the work and why were you interested in this study?
Yeah, so this study was one of the very first pieces of research that I conducted when I moved to Indiana University School of Medicine. Prior to that, I was at the University of Toronto, where I did research on mothers' speech and singing to babies with typical hearing, and also typically hearing infants' perception of music and musical qualities in the environment around them. So when I moved to Indiana, I was super excited to apply that kind of research from the typically developing world to the world of hearing impairment. So when we think of mothers talking to babies, we think of the babies responding, as typically hearing babies would do, right? You talk to them in this special way, and the babies will smile and giggle and laugh back at you and maybe babble if they're a little bit older, those kinds of things. So it made me wonder, what happens if the baby has hearing impairment? And so they can't hear exactly what the mother is doing. How does that affect, that relationship? How does it affect language development? And that's where this study came about. So when I moved to Indiana, I had the opportunity to work with a really unique population. And back in 2006, babies with implants were pretty rare. So it was just, babies were just starting to get these implants, and it was really exciting. So I had this kind of unique opportunity to work with this population where the babies had hearing impairment and then received a cochlear implant that helped restore some of their auditory perception abilities.
So what in terms of, before you began the study, what did you think you were going to find out? What were you hoping to find out?
I was really curious. So the previous literature, there weren't that many studies on mother's speech to babies with hearing impairment, but what was out there was mother's speech to babies who were deaf without any sort of amplification device. Yeah. And in those studies, the communication seemed to break down. Maybe upon initially learning that the babies were deaf, the parents would highly expand and exaggerate the speech to their babies, but then as the babies, wouldn't respond in the same way that typically hearing babies would, that kind of exaggeration would decrease. Mm-hmm. So I thought maybe we'd find some of that, with this population with hearing, with cochlear implants. But it was also possible that the cochlear implants allowed the babies to hear enough of the infant-directed speech that they might respond in a similar way that typically hearing babies would, and also that the parents were receiving therapy as well from, speech-language pathologists and being instructed in how to speak to their babies. So these kinds of combinations made me think, maybe mothers with babies with cochlear implants would adjust their speech as they would to a typically hearing baby.
Yeah. So there was a little bit of research, wasn't there, on that in the 1980s, and also very, very small numbers often reported, really tiny little case study, but just the impact of having that, that diagnosis and those slightly different interactions really did impact on the type of speech given to those babies in those early studies.
Yeah, that's right.
Really interested. So that's kind of what you were thinking you might find out. What did you find out? What did the study show you?
So we, in the study, we compared three groups of dyads, mothers and babies. And so the first group was mothers and babies who were deaf and had cochlear implants. The babies did. The mothers were all typically hearing across all three groups. In the second group, the babies were also deaf and used cochlear implants, but I'm getting the study mixed up with a different one. So there were the three groups were the group with babies with cochlear implants, and then two groups of typically hearing babies that were matched to the first group of babies with cochlear implants in two different ways. So the first way was we matched them by chronological age. So if the baby with an implant was, 12 months old, then we matched that with a 12-month-old typically hearing baby. And then we also matched by hearing age. And we calculated this from the moment the cochlear implant was turned on to the moment of testing. So if a baby had their implant for 6 months, but they were 12 months old, then we would have paired them with a 6-month-old typically hearing baby, or matched them with a typically hearing baby at 6 months. So then we compared the different prosodic qualities of mother's speech to babies with in these three different groups. In typical development and typical language interaction, mothers will speak with a very exaggerated style of language, otherwise known as motherese or baby talk. I'm sure your students have heard this. I'm sure they probably have done this in their lives, right? It's the, oh, you're such a cute baby.
Okay. We all do it, but we don't think about it.
That's right. So we measured those qualities. We measured the pitch height. We measured the pitch exaggeration. We measured how long the utterances were. We measured the duration between utterances. And these are all things that mothers adjust to babies who have typical hearing. So what we found was that these kinds of prosodic characteristics, for the most part, adjusted these prosodic characteristics in a way to the babies with the cochlear implants in a way that matched the babies with typical hearing who were matched by hearing age, not by chronological age. So we were really excited about this. This means that a mother is tailoring her speech to the hearing abilities of their children, right? Not necessarily the cognitive abilities, but the hearing abilities. Which seemed to make a lot of sense. So, mothers are in tune to their babies, they're in tune to what they can understand, what they can hear, and they're adjusting that speech so that the babies might pay more attention, if they're using highly exaggerated infant-directed speech. So we were super excited about that. Now, keeping in mind the content of the conversations we didn't measure in this study, so we didn't measure what they were talking about, and those kinds of things seemed age appropriate, right? Yeah. So the content of the speech depends upon the age of the baby. So if you're changing diapers at this age, you might be talking about changing diapers, and if you're playing with more advanced toys at this age, that might be what you're talking about.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You're thinking about then that matching towards the kind of experience of the baby and the mat. What was it, do you think, about cochlear implants specifically? Do you think it was the process of the fact that babies had the implant, or why do you think the outlook looks so different in your research than it had, back in the late 1980s?
I think it was probably a combination of the implant itself. I think that was a huge contributor, but also education on the part of the parents. Thinking back to the 80s, we didn't know as much about the importance of infant-directed speech or speech in general. And then in 2006, new parents are being bombarded with all these messages that you must talk to your baby and you must talk to them all the time. At least that's what it was when my son was born in 2006. but certainly the cochlear implant makes a big difference, right? So the babies are actually hearing what the parents are saying, and that highly exaggerated infant-directed speech as compared to adult-directed speech is probably something that they could pick up with their implants. Your students, I'm sure, know about cochlear implants and that they don't transmit all of the auditory message in the same way that a typical ear would do. But the properties of infant-directed speech, especially those big pitch jumps and the timing and the rhythmic, the sing-song qualities, would certainly make it through a cochlear implant. So I think the implant itself made a very big difference in comparison to the previous studies.
Yeah. I also think when I read your paper, I always think also in terms of thinking about those parents in the study, just the very process of the support that they, you know, once they decide that they're willing to think about child being implanted, the very process of understanding what the potential that implant has, and almost kind of to go down that route, there must be a belief that this works. And that actually language development can be, you know, spoken language development could be very typical, which I always think that must have an impact in terms of the way that that they're able to interact with their babies.
I wish we'd measured that. I'm certain that has a huge effect. So these are parents who, you know, even early on in their child's life before they got the implant, expected their child eventually to be able to hear and speak oral language. So I would imagine that has a major impact on the way that they're interacting with that child. You know, you're preparing your child for the implant, and then after they get the implant, you're educating them and interacting with them in a way that, you know, that maybe previously you didn't have that experience, but yeah, you expected it. So it becomes even better, you know.
Yeah, I know you didn't measure that, but I'm kind of thinking, you know, that belief that parents must have that, you know, I'm following this process and I believe it's going to work. Yeah, it's interesting, yeah, isn't it? Do you think
we should do that study, Ellen?
maybe that's the way forward. Do you think, so maybe this links to the other question that I've, the other kind of burning question that I've got is, do you think your study is limited in any way, or what else, you know, what else might you want to know?
Yes, it's limited in a number of ways, as is, you know, most research. I'm sure your students are learning about that as well. So in this study, we had 9 babies in each group, and in an ideal world, you would have way more than 9 babies and their mothers in each group. But we were limited by the number of babies who were receiving a cochlear implant and who were interested in participating in the study. And at that time, implanting a baby wasn't very common. So we were very limited in the number of babies that we could test. We also did all the recordings in a lab setting. So the parents and their babies came into a sound booth. It was a really big sound booth, the size of a typical room. And we spread out a blanket on the floor and had toys around them and, you know, try to make it seem natural. But they're in there. There's, you know, a mic hanging down from the ceiling. It's not a very natural setting. We instructed the mothers to speak to their babies as they would normally do at home. But whether that's true or not, you know, is also up in the air. We also only recorded them for about 10 minutes. And you know that a whole day with your baby is very different than a 10-minute recording session in the studio. So one thing that we're doing now in collaborations with some researchers at The Ohio State University, and they're using the Lena device.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And sending that home with parents who have children with cochlear implants and getting a whole day's recording to see what the natural environment induces in, you know, in these kinds of relationships and interactions. And also, you know, what do these interactions look like, you know, in the morning during breakfast or in the afternoon during playtime or, you know, heading to bed.
Oh, so, lovely. So just for students, the Lena device is a device that you kind of wear this device and it will record all the speech that you have throughout the day, so you can do a whole amount of analysis on that in terms of the speech delivered to children and babies. So
that's right.
There are some studies in the UK happening at the moment using the Lena device, so yeah, incredibly interesting.
Yeah,
so this is a big question. What do you think the big, you know, So this fundamental piece of research, it's from 2006, but we still love to use it in the Deaf Education Programme because we know how important your research, that piece of research is. So it's always a key read for us. So, you know, straight from you, Tonya, from the horse's mouth, as it were, that's a British phrase. I don't know if you know that one, from the horse's mouth. What do you think the big take-home message is for teachers and parents? What's the really big message here?
I think the main message is to keep that interaction going with your babies, but in a way that's in tune with their skills and their needs. What we don't want to get out is that you should just be constantly talking to your baby, whether it's infant-directed speech or not. Just talking at them is not the kind of message that we're trying to get across. We're trying to get across that these interactions should be sensitive and intentional and meaningful. And mothers seem to do this intuitively, at least in that study. They seem to do this, adjusting their speech according to the needs of the infants. And in later research, we also found that those kinds of adjustments that mothers are making is linked to infants' later language development. So it seems really important to keep in mind, you know, that we need to be sensitive to the baby's needs and, not just produce things for them that they might not pick up on in a natural kind of way.
Yeah, I think I'd 100% agree on that. And everybody who's watching this now, who's part of the Deaf Education Programme, I always say, we spend such a long time at the start of the programme talking about those incredibly early interactions, you know, but actually they're the big foundations for language and communication. It's all the big starting points, isn't it?
It is, it's the starting points. And they get the infants, you know, more than just the language. I know you're talking about language acquisition, but this is the start of the social bond between parents and babies. This is the start of the social emotional, social cognition, getting a sense of what a relationship and a conversation should look like. So all of those things are so important in these really early interactions, and they have a huge effect on the infant's development in language, cognition, emotion, all of these kinds of things later on.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's been really, really nice talking to you today, Tonya. The last time that I saw you was a few years ago, actually, in Manchester. So maybe in the future we may have the opportunity to see you physically again. Back in our hometown here.
That would be lovely. We would enjoy that.
Brilliant. Super. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Helen.